This is Teresa Trent, and you are listening to Books to the Ceiling, a podcast that features excerpts from new mysteries coming on to the market. Well, this week we're headed back in time to 1965, Camden, Texas. This is the fourth book in my Swinging 60s mystery series. Dot and her boyfriend Ben are on the case, and they've headed out to the marina. They're looking for clues, but they find something quite different. Here's a little more about the book. Like I said, this is the fourth book in the Swinging 60s mystery series, and the series revolves around Dot Morgan, a secretary with a nose for crime. After finding herself in the middle of a murder investigation in her last two secretarial jobs, Dot finds the only place that will hire her is her local funeral home. Why not? At least there all the clients are safe from what the town calls her murderous curse of Camden. It's 1965 and Dot is planning her wedding with a twiggy-like mini bridal gown, but secretly she's not so sure it's a good idea. If she really is cursed, what might happen to the one she loves? Is she willing to put him in danger? She and Ben put wedding planning on the back burner when one of the town's teenage girls gets hit by a drunk boater who gets away. The closer they get to the answers, the more Dot feels that the curse is coming for Ben. Now, here is an excerpt from I Can't Get No Satisfaction. After leaving Oliver, I decided to speak to the marina owner one more time to try to figure out who took the boat used in Henry's murder. Grabbing a sandwich at my apartment, I called Ben to see if he would like to go along with me. He was covering court this week for a reporter on vacation, so I was lucky to catch him at his desk. Yes, I'd love to go with you. And as luck would have it, the judge rescheduled the court case. Even though some people might think a reporter's life as glamorous and full of intrigue, Ben was covering a case of stolen pigs for the Camden Courier. Shorty Wyckoff, a pig farmer, claimed Bill Wheeler, another pig farmer, snuck up in the cloak of darkness and loaded up an 1,100-pound sow into the back of a pickup truck. What made her so valuable was her nickname, Fertile Myrtle. It was reported that she could get pregnant with only one try, and the results were dozens of little piggies. The newspaper had dubbed the case Makin' Bacon Caper. It was a popular series of articles, considering it was one step up from the farm report and featured the sex lives of pigs. I'll pick you up, but I have to warn you, old Bernice isn't doing very well. I think she's on her last breath. Old Bernice, a 1955 Oldsmobile, had several dents and a constant wheezing coming out from under the rusty brown hood. Should we take my car? Nice of you to offer, but I want to take Bernice today. I have plans for her. Besides setting her on fire and pushing her off the nearest cliff, I wasn't sure what he had in mind. I knew Ben had arrived when I heard the familiar wheezing and sputtering of Bernice in my driveway. Ben and I returned to the marina, but this time the marina owner was nowhere to be found. The marina office and residence stood atop a small hill overlooking the glistening waters of the bay. Selma, the guard dog the owner Shep had praised, did not bark or even growl, but playfully nudged her snout against my hand, her tail wagging vigorously in excitement. We knocked on the glass panes of the marina office, and after not getting an answer, I clasped my hands around my eyes and, leaning on the glass, looked inside. As I drew closer, I could hear the low rumble of jazz, heavy on the bass. It created a melodic backdrop with the gentle lapping of the waves. I think he must be farther back in the house. I hear a stereo. Ben put his ear to the glass and then turned around to face the parking lot. How many cars do you see parked here? I turned back and scanned the parking area. Three. Right. Ours. His. And who is that? He pointed at a wood-paneled station wagon. It was the kind of car a family with children would use. I don't know. I didn't see anyone else around here. Maybe someone has taken their boat out. Maybe. But when we were here last, there were 12 boats and 12 slips. Today, I only see 11. Considering Bubba Jenkins' boat was just impounded for a murder investigation, I would say all the remaining boats are here, which means whoever is driving that station wagon is inside, listening to jazz with Shep. Let's try knocking at the back door, I said. We made our way around, and as we did, the sound of the music grew louder, along with a few other sounds. Ben smiled and blushed a little as we heard rhythmic moans coming from an open window. They must be big music lovers. I giggled. Regular jazz nuts. There was no doubt what they were doing, and from the sounds of it, things were going quite well. Ben raised his hand to knock, but then stopped. Not the best time. Yeah, maybe we can figure this out on our own. I don't think I could erase a memory of a hot and sweaty Shep, but I am curious about who he has in there with him. Let's go look at the boats. We walked around the house to the parking lot. Selma followed along, her tail still wagging. As the jazz and the sound of other things faded in my ear, I asked Ben, "What exactly are we looking for?" "I'm not sure. Just something out of the ordinary. Maybe Henry's killer left something important on the dock." "You mean like his ID? That would make things easier. Do you know a lot about boats? We didn't do much boating at our house, although I have been water skiing with friends." "A little," he shrugged. "Not much. We need to concentrate, and hearing about you in a bathing suit is not making my thoughts flow." I giggled. "Billie Holiday will do that to a person." We walked on the wooden pier as the surrounding water was still. There was little call to take a boat out on a weekday. The boats were in a variety of sizes, but most were small speedboats with a pontoon moored on the end. Inside a few boats, there were remnants of beer bottles and sandwich wrappers. Not very tidy, these boat people, and from the looks of the empty beer bottles, there are several drunk drivers out on the lake at the same time. "No wonder Betty Weaver got hit," I said, walking to the end of the pier. The pontoon was covered with a canvas drape. Looking underneath, the insides were as neat as a pin. "Look at this," Ben said, crouched down by the tip of a speedboat. "It looks like they've sustained some damage here." On the side of the boat, a scrape had cut through the sleek paint, making a line through the boat name, Lucky Me. Not as lucky as the boat owner might have thought. "So somebody isn't very good at putting the boat back in the dock. I hardly think that has anything to do with boat thefts." Ben nodded. "You're probably right. But we know there has to be a boat thief out here. What's to say this person only used one boat?"
"You mean like a serial boat thief? Could a person get away with stealing different boats periodically from this marina? Was starting one boat as easy as starting another?"
"Think about it," Ben said. "Just how many days a week are Romeo and Juliet in there playing Billie Holiday on the stereo?" The boat dock was at least 50 yards from the combined house and office. Someone could be out here starting a boat. He wouldn't hear it. And Selma, the guard dog, gets put outside on occasions. So happy for a visitor, she doesn't even bark. Ben snapped his fingers. "Bubba Jenkins is Al's friend, right? We need to talk to him. He might be sitting on information.
You know, Al has mentioned him, but I'm not sure what he does."
"Then we'll have to ask him." As we turned to head back to Ben's car, the sound of a screen door opening pealed through the air. Shep, his cheeks rosy and his shirt half on, edged from the back of the house and immediately spotted Ben's car. His gaze shifted to the dock.
"Can I help you folks? How long have you been standing out here?"
I walked forward.
"We tried knocking, but there was no answer."
"Yes, you must have been busy," Ben said.
Shep lifted his chin slightly.
"Working on the books. Guess I got involved. Numbers are not my thing."
We knew just what his thing was. Ben walked forward and extended his hand. "Ben Dalton, Camden Courier." Shep reached out with a measured amount of enthusiasm.
"I remember you. What can I do for you this time?"
"We were wondering if you could provide a list of boat owners here at the marina. I would also like to get in touch with Bubba Jenkins." Ben said this with such efficiency, Shep let go of his hand and stepped back.
"Why would I do that?"
Ben swept his hand toward the boats. "In the interest of the investigation, two deaths on the water don't exactly put the security of your marina in good light."
Shep raised a single finger in the air and shook it at Ben's face.
Looky here, son. If I hand over a list like that, it will be to the police. And only the police will get it. Hear me? You and your lady friend need to quit nosing around here. If I see you again, I'll call the cops on you for trespassing. Get me?
Well, this is public property. There's not much you can do.
Watch me.
You seemed more than willing to let people nose around and steal other people's boats. I think you're a little late with your righteous indignation, I said.
Yeah, well, a tiger can change its spots. I don't need a lot of folks here getting into my business.
He glanced up at the house.
Talking to you has been a mistake, and now I am fixing it. Out with you.
As we made our way to the car, Ben turned and spoke.
We're leaving, but remember, if you ever want to talk, out.
And that was an excerpt from I Can't Get No Satisfaction, the fourth book in the Swinging 60s mystery series by me. I Can't Get No Satisfaction is available on Amazon and Goodreads. In this series, Dot has had many jobs, and this one I decided to set in a funeral home. The only problem was I had been in the front of funeral homes, but had never seen the working areas. Creating the setting of a funeral home was a learning experience for me. To research the setting, I visited the National Museum of Funeral History in Houston, Texas, and yes, there is such a thing. You might ask yourself, just what do you see in a funeral museum? Well, upon entering it, there is an entire showroom, if you will, of hearses. Hearses everywhere from horse-drawn carriages all the way up to modern-day hearses. There are rooms dedicated to famous funerals throughout history with some actual artifacts from some of the funerals. And there was a cremation room and even, and this is the part that always gets me, a gift shop. Just what do you buy? And to answer your next question, no, I did not purchase any keychains or t-shirts. But I did learn about many of the things involved in the business of a funeral home. I was also pretty glad to quit writing about the funeral home by the end of the book, which is why I often contrasted it with the beautiful marina. As I told you in the beginning, Dot is engaged in this book and she's starting to plan her wedding. And that storyline continues on into the next book that I'm writing. And that one is called Crying in the Chapel. If you notice, all of the books in the Swinging 60s mystery series are song names. And they are names that are chosen from the year of the book. So I hope you will pick up a copy of I Can't Get No Satisfaction. And don't forget to leave a review. That's all we have this week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to rate, review, or follow us. And the podcast is a part of my blog, and you can find it on the internet at teresatrent.blog. Thank you so much for stopping by, and I hope to see you again next week with a new mystery on Books to the Ceiling.